Tonight, on The Big Interview, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, their tumultuous lives and signature sound. What have I got to do? I'm a journalist, obviously, and I'm always interested in getting this story straight. Can we settle on how Crosby, Stills, and Nash started?
No.
There's no agreement?
No.
Three sensational singers who were there at Woodstock. Crosby, Stills, and Nash on The Big Interview. They were three singers who already had successful careers. David Crosby as part of the influential 60s rock band The Byrds, Stephen Stills in Buffalo Springfield, and Graham Nash in the legendary British rock group The Hollies. But in Los Angeles, in the summer of 1968, Crosby, Stills, and Nash got together for the first time, forming one of the first supergroups. And from the infectious strains of their first hit single, Marrakesh Express, it was magic. Don't you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? The harmony among the three soon became legend and inspired its own name, the California Sound. But their music quickly changed with the times. In the summer of 1968, America was in turmoil. Vietnam was raging. Anti-war sentiment was on the rise. Long Time Gone was written in response to the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy. Social commentary and criticism became a key element in much of the group's songwriting. By the following summer, Crosby, Stills, and Nash had added Neil Young and his distinctive voice. The group played Woodstock. It was only their second live performance together, but it became a seminal moment in the history of rock and roll. Sometimes it hurts so badly, I must cry out loud. Even though their voices blended seamlessly when they sang offstage, one band member's voice seemed to draw the most attention. Guitarist and songwriter David Crosby. In preparing for this interview, I was told that he's the unpredictable one. Why would they say that?
I have a reputation for being loony and irreverent and experimental. And it's, you know, I think it's a fair description. I wouldn't dispute it at all.
Well, you used the word experimental. Sometimes being experimental can get you into trouble.
It has, and sometimes it's gotten me into areas, you know, that I would not otherwise have made it to. For the human race, it's been the same way. It's been a good thing and a bad thing. For me, experimenting with drugs wound up terribly. For me, experimenting with musical forms wound up being the biggest open door that I hit in my musical growth, you know. So I think in the long run, it's a quality that the human race really needs and should nurture.
Well, let's talk about the negative side of it. You said there certainly is a positive side, experimenting with new musical forms. But on the bad side, let's talk about the highlights or lowlights, if you will. First of all, how did it start?
Well, we were a bunch of people trying to blow ourselves loose from the 50s. From Pat Boone and White Bucks, you know, from Father Knows Best. That was an age we wanted to leave behind, and maybe rightly so. So when the idea of smoking a joint, you know, came along, we thought, wow, this is pretty wonderful. And we embraced it. We thought, wow, this is going to give us all kinds of wild new ideas. And maybe it did, maybe it didn't, maybe the ideas would have come anyway, but we loved it. Then we encountered hard drugs, which, of course, as you know, although the government doesn't seem to know it, are completely different, pure poison. And they pretty much destroyed my life over a period of time, or I destroyed my life with their help. And that's where experimenting can get you in a lot of trouble. It's like experimenting when you're trying to climb up Half Dome without a rope. Not a good place to be.
Well, I'm smiling, but it wasn't funny at the time.
No, it wasn't funny at all. I wound up in a Texas prison. How funny could it be?
And you were in prison for how long?
A year.
Was that the low point?
Yeah. It's low point and high point. I wrote that judge who put me in that prison a thank you letter later on. And I said, I know that every day people show up in front of your court that you've seen before and that you've given a sentence to. And he wasn't a mean guy or anything. He was a guy trying to do a good job. And I said, this one time I wanted you to know it worked. I'm married. I'm working. I'm sober. I'm being tested sober. I'm going to AA. I'm happy. My life's working. The whole thing actually worked the way it was supposed to. And I just thought it might help you if you knew that every once in a while you win one.
If you hadn't gone to prison, if the judge hadn't sentenced you to prison, do you think you'd be alive today?
No. I can say that with almost absolute certainty. I would not have.
So in that sense, going to prison saved your life.
I think it did.
I'm a great believer you are what your record is, and your record shows that you did straighten up and you did become, did you ever, a productive member of society. What turned it around for you and when?
I think one of the biggest factors was my wife, Jan. You know, we went downhill together, and when I gave myself up, I surrendered myself to the authorities and willingly went to prison. She went into treatment. When I got out, we got together, and I think a lot of it was her support and her saying, let's go to a meeting and finding, you know, other things of value to put our time and effort into rather than trying to find more drugs.
You've been married how long?
36 years. And I think we're incredibly lucky that we're still together, because I would not be alive if she hadn't been there to help me through it.
In music, as in almost every other field, it's very difficult to sustain a career anywhere near as long as you and the others have been able to sustain your careers.
I can tell you why I think that is. Whether it's Crosby, Stills, and Nash with three writers or Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young with four writers, we had a wide palette, much wider palette to paint from than most bands would have. And all four of us can sing lead, all four of us can sing harmony, all four of us can play. And I think the songs are really the defining meat of the matter. Without songs that are about something and that make you feel something, if I can't sit down and sing you a song and make you feel something, I don't think I really have a song. And I think that's been our strength. We've lasted 40 years. There has to be something, and it's certainly not our looks.
Well, you've never been afraid, and indeed you seem to have been eager from almost the very start to mix political activism with music. And to those who say, that's not the role of a musician, they should make their music, make good sound, and in quotation marks, I can get behind that. But when they start getting politically active, that's when I get off the bus, unquote. To them, you say what?
You know, there's an awful lot of people who feel that way. I remember when we played in Atlanta the last tour that we did with CSNY, and Neil had a song called Let's Impeach the President for Lying, which the president most assuredly did do. A third of the audience walked out. And we're talking one of these big blimp hanger-sized buildings. It was a lot of people. I think that we have as much right to stand for what we believe in as you do, as you have, as you did, in a very exemplary fashion for many years.
Thank you.
Compliment intended. I think everybody does. I understand that we have more reach. We can spread word further than the guy driving the bus. But that doesn't deprive us of the right to stick up for what we believe in. I think it gives us a greater responsibility to, you know, express it carefully and in a prepared and in an intelligent, you know, way rather than just ranting rhetoric. But I think we have every right to. And I'm more than willing, as you have always been, to accept the responsibility and take the job seriously and try to make sure I get it right and do it right.
There must be voices, or tell me if they aren't, managers or promoters who say, listen, could you stay away from that controversial stuff, because we don't want a third of the audience walking out on us. It's bad for business.
Yes. There are and have been people who said that to us. They no longer manage us or our agents. The people that we work with understand who we are. They give us an interview like this instead of one where somebody says, well, what's your favorite color? Or do you date blondes? You're not going to ask me that. You're going to ask me things that will test me to come up with a cogent, you know, lucid answer.
Then I'm going to try to put you to the test.
Please do.
With your legendary musical past, really have reached icon level. That's a compliment to you, but it's one, not that I give you, it's one that you've earned. But at this age and stage, who are you and what are you?
Grateful. I am a very grateful man. You come very close to death. It's a very educational experience. I came very close. And it teaches you to treasure what you've got, every breath you take, I'm starting to quote Sting, that's not good. Every bone you break. It teaches you to treasure it, and I do. I am a very happy guy. I've had a tremendous amount of luck. I mean, according to the odds, I shouldn't be here. I have 3 fatal diseases, none of which they have a cure for.
And those are?
Hepatitis C, heart disease. I've got 5 stents in my heart. And diabetes, which is really a tough one. It's a disease of paying attention, and paying attention is sort of an adult quality. I'm not sure I really still qualify as an adult. Still trying, but...
You're still pretty young by my standards.
I feel good. You know, I try very hard to stay alive. You know, I go to a gym, I work out, I read constantly. I'm still trying to grow. I would like to be learning something new and growing the day that I die.
Will you come see me?